Now after they had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated and sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more. When Herod died, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who were seeking the child's life are dead." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And after being warned in a dream, he went away to the district of Galilee. There he made his home in a town called Nazareth, so that what had been spoken through the prophets might be fulfilled. He will be called a Nazarene. The Gospel of the Lord. The church, even these few days after the celebration of Christmas Day, still stands in tension with what those around the church want to do with Christmas. Prior to Christmas, we in the church kept our foot on the brakes and said we are in Advent. We are in a time of anticipation and preparation. Our songs of glory and praise to God will happen as we celebrate the birth of Jesus and the 12 days after that birth. And now we are at the time when people are just as determined to get rid of Christmas because it's over as they were to get ready for Christmas leading up to Christmas Day. But we still have the courage to say Merry Christmas for 12 days after Christmas. The word Christmas literally means Christ's birth, the birth of the Messiah, the birth of the Anointed One. And what we encounter in the Gospel text today, which is a painful text to hear after the warm fuzzies of Christmas Eve, as we encounter a man who is so filled with fear and is infuriated by the birth of Christ that he brings about the death of thousands of boys under the age of 2. A man who hates Christmas, the birth of Christ. That in and of itself should tell us that celebrating the birth of Jesus runs against the world in which we live and the way the world goes about life. We see three references to the prophets in the gospel text today. The first reference is from the prophet Hosea, which comes in verse 15 of our text. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet Hosea. Out of Egypt I have called my son. Hosea's text referring to when God sent Moses into Egypt and brought Israel safely out of their slavery into the promised land. But now all of a sudden Matthew is taking that prophecy and applying it to Jesus, that coming out of Egypt where Jesus will have spent many parts of his growing up years is someone new. Not like the old Israel that continued to wander and stray and turn against God, but one who is going to be obedient. And we hear later in the Gospel of Matthew, not one who came to be served, but someone who came to serve and to be ransomed for many. A Messiah, a Christ, a Son of God. That this Jesus, born of Mary, is that chosen one. God, man, man, God coming together. If we separate out the two and Jesus is purely God, it doesn't give us any hope for this physical nature in which we live now. Because we know that our bodies struggle and our bodies are broken. But if it's Jesus is nothing more than human, then the best we can do is the best that we can do. And we know that that's limited. We can never get all the way to achieving perfection. But when you bring man and God together, something happens to humanity, that the broken is brought together with the healer. The one who is filled with dread is brought together with the one who promises hope. The one who is filled with anxiety is brought together with the one who brings peace and consolation. The one who weeps at death is filled with the satisfaction of the vision of resurrection. Shortly after my mother-in-law died, as my son was processing the loss of his grandmother, he looked at me as we were going to bed that night and said, "Grandma will never get a chance to see me play baseball." And he had hoped this spring that she would come out to visit and that she could watch him play baseball. So just recently, he said, "I had a wonderful dream about Grandma last night." He said, "I was playing for the Phillies." My son has delusions of grandeur, obviously. "I was playing for Phillies, and all of a sudden, Grandma was at the game. And Grandma came down on the field, picked up a bat, swung the bat and hit a home run, then ran around the bases. And somehow in that moment, in that dream, in that vision, it helped him with his grieving that Grandma wasn't there to see him play baseball. It brought that pain and that grieving together with a vision of what is possible when we are raised to new life. God, man, Jesus, Son of God, come together in the midst of our pain to bring healing. Second prophet that is quoted is the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah wailing and loud lamentation. Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more. A weeping that's in reference to when God's people were taken into their Babylonian captivity and how they sat at Ramah and they wept because they were leaving behind everything that was normal and comfortable and safe for them and moving into a strange land, being forced to do so. But what is fascinating is that this quote comes from the 31st chapter of Jeremiah, a chapter that isn't about pure lamentation, but also about hope, about restoration, about God making a new promise, a new covenant. It's that text where we get into verse 31 of that chapter. Behold, I am making with you a new covenant that I will write on their hearts. It's a vision of a promise that we see the will of God being brought forth into the world, and we see in opposition to the will of God someone like Herod, who in his opposition to God brings about the death of many children. I think that needs to raise up for us the reality in which we live of the things that we do that bring harm to our children. See that in schools as one student brings harm and destruction to other students in the class by taking a weapon into the building. But it doesn't have to be as physically violent. It can happen through social media and bullying, how it brings harm to others. It's a reality that we live with even here in Lancaster County of sex trafficking of young girls. What are we doing to our children as we stand in opposition to the will of God? Talking to a young soldier who's the stepbrother of my nephew who had served in Afghanistan, and he said as they were raiding this one house, he went storming through a door, and there was a 9-year-old boy sitting there holding a rifle facing him. Pulled the trigger. Fortunately, the gun didn't go off. And in that split second, he ran in and ripped the gun out of that boy's arms. And then he said he was just overwhelmed with frustration and anger, and he took that boy and laid him over his knee and spanked him. What are we doing to our children that they're forced to fight and to kill? Even our own soldiers forced to shoot and to kill. Thankful to Professor Carey, who posted on Facebook a blog from the Huffington Post entitled The Massacre of the Innocents and the Soul of the Warrior. And he quotes in that blog what an Iraq war veteran faced one day in the city of Ramadi in central Iraq. There was a large political protest going on near the main government building. They were demanding, the protesters, the end of the U.S. occupation, and then started to throw grenades at the building. The soldier was ordered to occupy a defensive position on the rooftop, and then a young man emerged from the crowd holding a grenade, and he drew back his arm to throw it, and all of us opened fire on him. He says, before I squeezed the trigger, I remember thinking that he was too far away to hurt any of us by throwing the grenade, and yet I still fired. I saw that young man first alive, walking, breathing, and then on the ground, dead. And that day, I knew something had forever changed inside of me. I felt a hole within me that had no bottom, an infinite void that could not be replenished. For weeks after the incident, my mind could not shake the images of this young man walking and breathing one moment and lying on the ground dead the next. Many of the soldiers that we are sending in to battle aren't much older than high school graduates. What are we doing to our children as we stand in opposition to the will of God? There's one final quote in this text from the prophets. It says, there he made his home in a town called Nazareth, so that what had been spoken through the prophets might be fulfilled, which is, he will be called a Nazarene. This isn't a specific reference to any one prophet in the Old Testament, but captures the essence of a number of places in the Old Testament. In one place, a Nazirite is one who was set aside for almost priestly duties. In another place, it refers to the one who is set apart for service of the Lord. And out of this backwater town comes the one who saves. Now, most likely what Matthew is doing here is countering those in the synagogue who are saying to the early Christians, how is it that the Son of God can come from a place like Nazareth? Can anything good we hear from the Gospel of John come from Nazareth? And what Matthew asserts, that this man, God, brings about the will of God in this world. This is the Christ who will change the world. As I was sitting with the family this week, they moved their mother into hospice. The daughter was saying how in a moment she, as the daughter, was bathing her mother. That seemed to be such an odd transition in her life. And as we were talking about that, we both recalled a story that she was reading to her young daughter and one that I read to my son when he was an infant, which is Love You Forever. And it shows this mother who picks up this baby born to her and holds the baby and every night would sing, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. And as the book proceeds, we see them as this terrible toddler who's flushing everything down the toilet. But said even at night when he finally fell asleep, the mother would pick him up and rock and sing to him, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. And when he became a teenager and everything the mother said was wrong, when the mother said up, the boy said down, when the mother said in, the boy said out. We're going through that at home right now, by the way, with my son. It's opposite world for Andrew. She would sneak into his room at night and sit by his bed and smooth his hair and sing, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. The last page, when the mother has become too elderly to pick up and hold her son, the son goes to her bedside, gently picks up his frail mother, and sings, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always, as long as I'm living, my mother you'll be. What we see happening with Mary, who is holding this child, that soon the child will hold her and will sing, I will love you forever, as long as I'm living, your Savior I'll be. And it's the same promise for you. I'll love you forever. As long as I'm living, Jesus says, I'll be your Savior.